So that was The Cure, and we're now officially out of the singles hour. But just to let you know that, in fact, Gwen Stefani won. Was that a surprise?
No, I would probably have predicted that.
Would you? Stuart, would you have thought, out of 8 tracks, Gwen Stefani would have won?
Not unless it was a very poor selection.
It was.
Surrounding it.
Well, right. We had Gwen, Delta, Goodrum, Stereogram, Pelumere, the Archie Bronson outfit, who came very close, only half a point behind, Jamie Callum, U2, Portobello, and Death From Above.
You know, see, it could have gone any way, though, I reckon. There's no clear leader in that list. It's a bunch of lame horses.
Oh, which one would you have put your money on?
I don't know, I haven't heard them all. I bet, you know, but you know what? Even though I don't even like them, I bet the U2 record was probably the best one, wasn't it?
Do you think?
I don't know.
Well, as we were saying, it's very reliable, but we didn't want to give it too much because it's you don't really want to give The Cure that many points, you know?
No, don't.
No.
No.
So, we're so lucky to have Stuart Lee in the show with us tonight. Hardly believable, really, I think, in this funny little shoebox of a room that we've got someone.
Well, like, all things are like, all radio stations are like this.
Is that true, though?
Yeah, they are, really. I mean, I do Resonance over at, off Charing Cross Road, and it's the same kind of setup as this. Worse, actually. This is better.
No.
Yeah.
No, I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's just, at least you can see what you're doing in here.
Really?
And you've got a computer.
Do they not? I asked for them for work experience. Am I getting better work experience here?
You're probably learning as much, but you're not being exposed to the perverse range of influences that you would be if you were in the Resonance studio.
And which are they?
Well, just they have a kind of a really, really wide playlist, which can just include raw sound in its untrammelled form.
Nice.
Well, you know, you never know what you're going to get.
No, that's good. How long have you been working with them?
Well, sorry, I started eating an orange now, and that probably sounds horrible.
Don't worry, we've been eating all through the show so far.
Well, it started off, actually, Resonance started off as part of John Peel's Meltdown at the South Bank in 95. And they had a little bit broadcast from a little room like this at the top of the South Bank Centre, a small hot room. And then about 5 years later, they got a break off the radio authority to do this thing. But they have to keep raising money for it, so you know, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, but it sounds good.
Yeah, it is. It's great. You can play whatever you want.
That is amazing.
And it's weird, because whenever you get asked to do real radio, people go, would you like to come on and host Breeze Block for a bit on Radio 1? And you go, can I choose my own guests and music? And they go, no. And you think, well, it's better doing Resonance.
Even but for the fact you don't like get paid. Even they don't let you choose.
No, you don't. Everything's, it appears that way. Mm. But it's a secret.
Yeah, see, someone told me that a very prominent Radio 1 DJ doesn't choose his own songs.
So. Well, you know Dave Lee Travis, so you won't remember because you're too young, but he didn't own a record player or a CD player.
Oh my God.
In his house, and he used to just make tapes at work and play them in the car. And it was actually, I remember meeting John Peel once, and he was just baffled by the extent to which Radio 1 DJs were not that interested in music.
Yeah. But he was. So did he get his own way with playing his music? He must have done.
Yeah, he did whatever he wanted, yeah.
He was bigger than them,
yeah.
Really, so he got to do that.
Yeah.
Good old John. So, what have you been up to today? A lot, we've just heard.
Well, I came back, I went on Mark Radcliffe's Radio 2 show last night.
Ah, that's real radio.
Yeah, but, you know, it's much the same playlist as this, to be honest. And that was great. And then so I was in Manchester last night, and I thought, oh, Manchester, I remember when Manchester was a proper town, I was thinking, oh, I'll be able to go and sit somewhere for a few hours and have a quiet pint in a club, but now, in a pub, and just read a book, but now they're just full of students dancing around and football on huge screens and things like that. It's frightening.
Did you know there are 84,000 students in Manchester?
Are there? Well, I think they're all in pubs on the Oxford Road as well. So I couldn't even do that. And this morning I came back, and I hurried quickly to MTV's Leicester Square office to promote my stand-up show next week, where I appeared on a show hosted by the attractive comedian Zane Lowe. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Or is it? Yeah, it's him. It's not Zane Grey.
Interesting that you just...
Alex Zane. No, Alex Zane. That's
right.
His name.
Alex, isn't there an Alex Lowe as well? Just
because it might be like anyway, some bloke who had Alex or Zane in his name hosted it. He's very good. But it was full of young people all shouting, and it was a bit like me on Cracker Jack. And when they started talking to me about what intro music do you use for your show on when you do stand-up, when I started talking about the Evan Parker Trio, a 1960s British free jazz group, I thought, this isn't really MTV material, is it?
Not getting it.
But it was okay.
Yeah, good. I must say, you're making us look a bit pasty. You look a bit tanned over there. Have you been on holiday?
No, I'm just, I think I'm in advanced stages of liver failure, and it gives you a healthy glow, yeah.
Well, then enough of those tangerines. My mum had a pupil once who went orange from them, so you might want to...
Really?
Yeah, you might
want to... That sounds like a story she told someone rather than real, to stop them eating tangerines.
It's actually true.
It is true.
It is true.
Because actually, when they first brought flamingos to Britain, they stopped being pink because of they weren't eating a particular kind of shrimp which contained a pink chemical which turned them pink.
What colour did they go?
Well, just they went kind of white or grey.
It would have been great
if they'd
gone green.
So we do turn the colours of the food that we eat. And
oh, God, I wonder what that says about me.
Well, you know, Dale Winton, for example, eats a lot of orange hair gel. And that's what makes him go that colour.
That must be the one. That must be the one.
Yeah.
So let's move on with some music. I've chosen a track to go first, which is a track that I feel... in some ways connect me to you and Phoebe and me to you, because this is when we saw you at a gig arguing with someone trying to get in.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And on the back of that, I sent you an email.
Is it Patti Smith then?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
It is, and it's the cliche Patti Smith choice, but hey, anything's great, so
good.
Here we go. Well, there she goes, cheekily fading out before her time is up, really. But tell me, what is it about Patti Smith that captivates you so? And did you cry at that gig? Because I did.
I didn't at that one, but I did the first time I saw her. I think, you just don't get many people like that in rock music now, who kind of totally have their own point of view and their own thing going on and will put up with any level of criticism. And also the great thing about her is she's not actually, she dares to look ridiculous, and that makes her even more cool. She is ridiculous. She says things without thinking about them, and they don't make a lot of sense, but you know that she believes in them on some level. There's a live recording of her doing My Generation by The Who in 1975, and at the end of it she shouts out, "We created it, now let's take it back," and everyone goes hooray, and you think, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything at all, but it's done with such conviction that it wins you over.
But I think all bands do that, really, don't they, to some extent? They'll say something and the crowd go hooray.
Yeah.
What?
But although her meaningless things tend to include quotes from poets or incredibly long words, so you feel that they're significant. I think she's brilliant. I really think she's great. Yeah. She didn't write the last album much, but she's still great.
Mm. I don't know, I quite enjoyed it. But anyway, let's talk a bit more about you. You've been a big... Well, you've been around for a fair while, and on our TV screens for a long time now.
I haven't been on your TV screens for about 15 years... About 5 years, unless you're getting a special channel I don't know anything about. But yeah, no, I used to do... I did two TV series in the mid 90s, one called Fist of Fun and one called This One with Richard Nocci, that were both on BBC Two. Yeah, well, actually, that's partly why, having come back to stand up after 3 or 4 years of not doing it, partly why it suddenly has the illusion of going well, is because people that sort of used to listen to you on the radio when they were kind of 12 are now old enough to be critics, promoters, or an audience, and you kind of feel like it's kind of come round, and people think, I've got better, but actually it's just about demographics, and suddenly, like, they're there, you know, it's like the Jesuits, you know, give me a slightly autistic child at 13, and at the age of 26, they'll be coming to see me, yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that, but when you were on the TV, I would do my GCSEs, I remember, maybe a bit earlier than that as well, because we always used to, like, run your quotes around the science labs. How do you feel about that?
I'm absolutely delighted, you know, I mean, it's really great, because obviously that's the kind of thing that I did with the young ones, so it's really nice to think of that happening. Yeah, I hope it didn't get anyone in trouble.
Which do you think, sorry Phoebe, do you want to ask something?
I do.
Go on.
What are the chances of the BBC finding your This Morning with Richard?
I think they did find them, the four that they'd lost, but that doesn't mean that they can do anything with it, because that show was written about what was happening that week, and it would be really odd to rebroadcast it. But people are always emailing me and saying, will they be commercially available? And they aren't, but they're often on eBay, on bootleg DVDs. Mm. So if anyone wants one. In fact, if anyone's got one, they can give me one.
I think I will be Ed.
Yeah.
Ed, come on, admit it. You got them.
I didn't buy them off eBay. I know someone who gave me some copies of them.
Yeah.
But,
well, good.
Okay. Yeah. There are some people who seem to make small fortunes selling these copies of them on eBay. And then usually it's not the people who actually kind of find the stuff and put it
right,
and make it available.
Right,
but slightly unscrupulous people who.
Well, I'm delighted. You know, I think if it were to be commercially released, it would probably be a flop. But as it is, there's
enough money,
you know,
for like one bloke
to produce them and sell them on eBay is great. You know, cottage industry.
When you were writing those series, did you ever think that so many years later, Phoebe and I would still be like, I'm just off to the toilet, whenever we were going to the toilet from the TV, from the radio studio, or even, is it the businessman in his suit and tie? Did you think that we really would be doing that now?
No, and in fact, a very confusing thing is, So I only just remembered what the first thing you were talking about was, which was a little piece of fruit or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, it was the bladder.
Oh, right, a bladder, yeah. Right, okay. See, what happens, very strange, when I'm at minimal weight and I've got a haircut that's short, which happens about every few months, I go through a phase of looking similar to what I did about 7 or 8 years ago. People kind of go past you in vans in the street and they'll shout out something like, where's your something? You know, you don't even know what it is, right? And it obviously relates to something that they remember you doing. But the thing about those shows is they were done in such a rush and on such a small amount of money. It was so hectic that I can't, and I never watched them back, so I can't really remember a lot of the things. So you have a kind of surreal relationship with your own past where people write to you about it or shout things at you, and you very often don't know what they are. And I'm very proud of that work, but I really can't remember a lot of it, so it's odd when that kind of thing happens.
Yeah, you got into comedy at an early age, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I moved to London when I was 21 and started doing the stand-up circuit, then doing open spots and whatever.
And you were working with Richard Herring from then, was it?
Yeah, well, I always did stand-up on my own, but we must have done about 200 shows of the double act live around about 95, 96, 97.
Yeah.
Because we did a radio show together, and then we did these TV shows together. So, yeah.
Done a lot.
Yeah.
But now it's solo life.
Yeah, which is sort of... Well, I mean, I probably did about 200 gigs in my life with a double act, and I've probably done about 2,000 on my own over 15 years.
Wow.
I mean, we didn't fall out, but everything we were doing kept getting cancelled or not funded, and it just kind of ran out of road. And actually, I think probably in the end...
That's the text.
Oh, wow.
Someone's talking to us.
People live texting in.
Yeah.
I think in the end, it's probably good, because Richard never done stuff on his own. I think it's helped him find his own sort of voice, and he's really comfortable with what he's doing now, so that's good.
So we'll put another track on, and then we'll come back to talking about what you're doing now, because it's phenomenal. There's so much to talk about. We're not going to be able to get to listen to any music if we don't, shut up once in a while. So it's The Bees. So that was The Beautiful Bees. Well, The Bees, really. I don't want to get in trouble with any branding. From the Isle of Wight. What do you think? Do you like them?
It's all right.
All right.
Yeah.
I interviewed them a couple of weeks ago and bowled over. Really, we like them, don't we?
My girlfriend's a bloke that she works with knows them.
I thought you said my girlfriend's a bloke.
No.
He did say that. Actually.
This bloke Jake that my girlfriend knows knows the Bees. Imagine that.
Imagine.
He's from the Isle of Wight, you see.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You probably know everyone on the Isle of Wight if you're from the Isle of Wight, I imagine.
Yeah, you know what it's like.
I can't imagine knowing anyone. So anyway, let's talk a bit more about you. And what is going on? Well, no. Let's go chronologically from This Morning with Richard But Not Judy. What happened then?
Well, I sort of gave up everything. Within about... That was sort of summer of 99 that got cancelled. I carried on doing stand-up for about a year and a half, and I got kind of fed up with that. And I made a pilot for Channel 4 that didn't get picked up, and I directed a series for BBC Two that won an award but got cancelled. And so I kind of just gave up on everything, really. I finished a book that I was writing, which was good. And then...
Is that the book that was the novel?
The Perfect Fool, yeah. And then that came out. And then about 3.5 years ago, the composer Richard Thomas, who used to play the piano on This Morning with Richard Not Judy, he said, do you want to help me write words for this opera about Jerry Springer? And it was only supposed to be for like 5 or 6 people and on for a week at Battersea Arts Centre. And then it just kind of kept going. And 3.5 years later, it's got 40 people in it. And it's at the Cambridge Theatre in London's glittering West End.
I am.
It's the only thing... The only thing I'm not remotely ashamed of that's ever had any kind of profile that I've done, that and the odd stand-up. Everything else is always something I feel it wasn't right or whatever. But I think partly why that happened was because we just sort of did it for ourselves. So there was never a point where anyone was telling you how it should be done. So, you know, the things that anything that's right with it is sort of down to you or the people you work with, and anything that's wrong with it is as well. But there isn't a feeling of having been interfered with, and that's the sort of problem with telly, is the older you got, the more convinced you became that you knew what you were doing, but there still were people saying, we'll do it this way, and they may have been right, but the good thing about this is it just feels wholly ours in some way.
Yeah. You know? Do you go and see it a lot?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the first kind of year it was on intermittently, for about every 3 months it'd be on for 2 weeks. And then it opened at the National Theatre in April last year, and I directed that, so I saw pretty much every performance there. I saw about 2 out of 3 at the Cambridge until July this year, when I got the second cast in, and I've only been in about 8 times since, because they're really good, and it's nothing ever seems to really go wrong with it. So
Who's been your favourite Jerry Springer?
Well, I think, given that there's probably not listening, David Soul, really, who's doing it now. David Soul from the TV Starsky and Hutch has been really, really good, and he's found lots of things in it that I suspect probably aren't in the writing and are just in his own intelligence as an actor and his own kind of humanity as a man who has lived a ridiculous life and has gone, you know, he was a superstar and then he blew it all and had like 15 years of being an idiot and then came out the other side, and he kind of, so he brings a lot of sort of suffering and dignity to the part that I suspect is more to do with him than what we wrote.
Yeah.
But he's great.
Do you get a lot of people turning up to see David Soul and not really knowing anything about it, or?
I'm not sure. Yeah. It's hard to say. I mean, he does have fans, but and also he has this kind of thing where all women in their 40s blush when they meet him because they will have all had a sexual fantasy about him as a teenager, and all men of my age or a bit older, they all feel obliged to try and be a little bit cheeky because they have some Oedipal issue with him because they would have really admired him when they were in the 70s when they were kids. But he's very, very good at dealing with it in a hugely diplomatic and reasonable way.
Do you think you ever get any people going there who are going there to see Jerry Springer and they think
a couple
Springer?
Of times, once or twice, but not very often. But that does happen when me and Richard Herring were touring this morning with Richard Not Judy. We were doing it in Hull, I remember, in about 1996. No, must have been 98. And a number of people left Hull Truck Theatre at half time because they were expecting to see Richard Madeley and Judy Finnegan. And we wondered at what point did they think this isn't it? Some sort of kind of greasy, sarcastic 20-somethings being rude about things. And then maybe they're thinking that we would suddenly go, anyway, enough of us. And now Richard Madeley and Judy Finnegan. But
they should have got that it wasn't going to be Judy. They should never have expected Judy.
I know, I don't know what they're expecting, but they were expecting something to do with them and not us.
Oh, dear.
But on the whole, people come, I think, knowing what a Jerry Springer the Opera is.
Yeah. Do you know what? I haven't been to see it yet, and it makes me want to cry.
Well, you'll be able to get £10 tickets very soon.
Really?
With a special offer from a corporate sponsor.
Oh, so that's what we've been waiting for.
Yeah, the good thing actually is the cheaper the tickets get, the higher the IQ of the audience is, and the shows go better.
Oh, really?
Because, you know, the kind of West End price to run it at what it costs to run is kind of £45 for the most tickets, and that means you kind of get knobs and tourists going. And actually what you want are, you know, people that are interested in things, who take chances on things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and the cheaper the tickets get, the better the audience. The more you look at the audience and think, I could imagine being in that audience. Whereas when it first opened in the West End, I thought, I don't even know any of those people.
Yeah. I must say it's one of the more expensive shows, isn't it, really?
Not really. It looks like it is.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Well, the reason it feels like it is because all the Andrew Lloyd Webber ones have got three tickets that are £10.
Yeah,
so they're able to put prices from £10 to £50, whereas ours says £25 to £45 because we haven't done the hypocritical lip service of paying making out that it's cheaper than it is when it isn't.
Oh,
but you can't do
it,
it costs £45,000 a week to run.
Oh.
You know, it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's a fucking ridiculous. It's a stupid idea to try and do it.
But it's brilliant, it's doing so well, and we will go and see it as soon as there's some £10 tickets. Well, I will try and go before.
You need to go soon because it's actually losing money at the moment, it may close.
No.
Yeah.
Is that really true?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So you need to go.
We'll go. Everyone listening, go. We've had some text messages in, some questions for you, so we'll get to those after we play Yesterday's News by The Gossip. And should we get on to those text messages then? We've had, what was the name of the, was it Mike?
Yeah.
Mike asks you, Stuart, what are your three best put-downs to hecklers?
Well, you know, it depends on the heckle.
Mm.
And what I tend to try and do is not have a heckle put-down, but to engage the person in a very lengthy dialogue, which will proceed at a measured and dull pace to the point where they're embarrassed to have interrupted because it's just created a real feeling of inertia in the room.
Nice.
And I find that much more effective than a fast comeback.
Yeah, so there aren't three...
No, not really. For example, last week, some people shouted out, tell us a joke and stop talking in a monotonous voice. So I explained that my act's kind of predicated on not really having jokes, but having kind of longer notions, and that the monotonous voice, though I admit that it was monotonous, has actually served me well over 15 years as a way of delivering a certain kind of information.
Hmm.
Now that, as a heckle put down, is not, I remember when I had my first drink, admittedly, but it has its own unique beauty.
Yeah, yeah, it does, you're right.
Yeah. So it's, you know, more about trying to open up the dialogue then close it down. I think most heckle put downs are close down the dialogue. I always think, well, let's open it up and see what happens. But because it could be really, it will end up showing the just stupidity of what the person said. But the problem with that is that I think people tend to assume you're out of control and you've lost grip on the room. I mean, I was in Liverpool about 4 years ago and a bloke kept shouting out in the front row that he wanted me to make jokes about illegal immigrants. And I didn't really know what he meant, so he was really drunk. And then I got him up on stage and gave him the mic and sat down looking at him, just wondering what he would do. And he didn't really know what to do. And he stood there for about a minute and a half in a really uncomfortable way. And then security came and got him off. Now, the problem there was that they'd spoiled the moment. What would have been great is to see how long can we wait? How long can a room of people look at one of them, a member of the public, and what he has done? And let's hear his hilarious joke about illegal immigrants. And I kind of feel, put the heckler on the spot, put the person interrupting the spot by, let's see what their contribution would be, rather than trying to close it down. You know. But on the whole, I don't tend to get it. That's the other thing, because it's a kind of myth about comedians being heckled. I think if you're a kind of act that invites it, if you're about dialogue, then you might, but I'm not really about that. I've got my thing that I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And so it's not really... If people do join in, they tend to be asking quite interesting questions. In Edinburgh, in the set that I'm doing now, that starts on the 16th at the Soho Theatre, 9:30 every night for 2 weeks, I currently use the word prelapsarian, and a bloke in Edinburgh shouted out, "What does prelapsarian mean?" And I thought, fair enough, it's presumptuous to use a word like that and not qualify it. So we had a nice talk about that. But that, you know, that was good.
Yeah. Are you,
what does it mean?
It means from before the fall. It means in a state of innocence before the Garden of Eden was corrupted and whatever.
Wow.
And that's just one of the many interesting subjects that I'll be touching on at the Soho Theatre next week.
Every weekday from 9:30?
Yeah, every weekday from 9:30.
Wow,
yeah.
We'll be there.
Yeah.
I must say, I'm always quite scared to go into comedians because I'm one of these people who has to have an eyesight to the door so I can get to the toilet, I can go out with. But I'm always too scared that I have to sit there because if you get up, comedians go, "Oh, look, they're going."
Yeah, well, you know what? I hate that. And because I hate it being done to me, especially as someone who has intermittent bowel problems. Often there are reasons why I need to leave the room. And I would never pick on anyone like that. And I just think, I'd hate that to be me in an audience. I don't like being made to join in with things or spoken to. And though it doesn't, some people do that kind of thing really well, but I just hate it.
Yeah, I've seen Bill Bailey a few times. He's the only comedian that I've actually seen a lot, I'd say. But I always have to sit like really cross-legged. I'm not going to move in case he says something. Be too embarrassed.
Would he, though?
I don't know, we'd be too scared to find out. I don't want to find out. I'd be so embarrassed. I'm not one of these people who likes that kind of attention.
I did, I went to a show at Bass Yacht Centre the other week, and you did have some audience interaction. The bit at the beginning where you get people to pull party poppers over your head and stuff like that.
I get people to pull party poppers over my head. Now, what I'm about to say sounds as if I've gone insane, but in the sort of 3 or 4 years of not doing stand-up, I wrote this book, you know, about... I wrote this novel, and one of the kind of strands in it was about clowns in Native American societies. And I started reading a lot about the clown and the fool. And I kind of thought, if I've got a problem, it's that I look fairly nondescript and ordinary. There's nothing inherently absurd about me. And whereas it seemed to me you could do more dangerous and frightening and odd and unsettling material if you look absurd in some way. And obviously that's a great thing that Johnny Vegas has got, or Jerry Sadovitz, is there's a clowny element to them. Whereas I just look like, you know, normal, really. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to open with this material about the September the 11th bombings, the World Trade Center being destroyed, I kind of need to offset it in some way. So I thought, well, why don't I get members of the public to shoot streamers over my head out of party poppers so that when I start doing that material, I've got like string hanging off my head. And I never referred to it ideally throughout the show. And some nights it was great because I'd be doing the whole thing about really serious subjects with coloured streamers hanging off my hair. And it seemed ideal to me. That was kind of a breakthrough moment for me when I realised what I needed was to have streamers on my head. And I don't know, I mean, maybe, I don't know how I'm going to top this for the 2005 show. I may have to have kind of coloured dreadlocks or something sprouting out
fireworks
of the very short amount of hair I've got left, or fireworks, or just something. Or I actually thought about, I did Children in Need on Sunday night, and the Pudsey costume was backstage, and I was looking at it, and I just thought, I wonder what happened if I just went on without the head, but dressed as the bear, but didn't refer to it at all. So I think what you kind of need, I had this kind of weird moment of epiphany in the Hopi Indian Reservation, where I started thinking about clowns in native societies in Arizona about 4 years ago, and I thought, I need something, because the wise fool is one thing, but you also have to have something stupid about it. And I think also starting doing stand-up in the 90s, it was when comedy was the new rock and roll, you know, and there was a whole thing about you're like pop stars, you know, look at them. And now I kind of think maybe that was a real wrong turn. Maybe there should be something just stupid about it. And that stupid thing for me at the moment is having party poppers falling on my head.
That's good.
Whilst talking about Al-Qaeda and the Bush administration.
Yeah. I think that's a good trick.
Yeah.
It's amazing. We're going to check that out. Did you say something?
No, I suppose maybe we should punctuate it.
I was just going to go for the other text message that we had,
which
is from someone called Kat, who's got an exam tomorrow, so she wants some music for herself, and she also wants a funny joke.
Yeah, funny joke.
Be funny.
You know, it's so hard, isn't it? Funny joke. I sort of, I don't know, I just read some kids' jokes are good, aren't they? What's brown and sticky? A stick. Yeah. Everyone likes that. So that'll do. That's the best you're getting, love.
Oh, it's good. It's good. We like that. So you can tell that to all your friends tomorrow after your exam. So let's push on with some music. It's the first track off the new album from Elliot Smith. It's called Coast to Coast. Right then, while Elliot Smith just rambles on the background there, what were we talking about? We've got another email with some more questions for you. So it's from Rob, who says that you're very, very funny, but in a more rude word that I can't...
Say who I am. Say my name. That'll help people know who it is.
Oh, who it is? That's funny. Yeah. Stuart Lee in the studio.
Is that
great?
That's what I
say as well.
It's Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
On Rare FM, Stuart Lee... you can email us to get some more questions in. You've got 14 minutes left of Stuart Lee's attention. So studio@rarefm.co.uk, but you're doing well, you're finding it yourself. Rob wants to know three things: your favourite sitcom, your favourite stand-up act, and your favourite sketch show.
Okay, favourite sitcom. Well, it changes, doesn't it? But at the moment, Curb Your Enthusiasm, which you can only see on BBC 4 if you've got a digital or something, but you can buy it. And favourite stand-up, I don't know, that keeps changing as well. Because if you see the lot... At the moment, I think Daniel Kitson, probably, I don't know if anyone knows him. I think he might be the best stand-up in Britain for decades. He's fantastic. And then favourite sketch show. Well, I like Big Train, because my friend Kevin Eldon's in it, and I like watching him being made to dress up as Chairman Mao and things like that.
Didn't you make him dress up as funny things before?
I've made him dress up as a number of things, yeah. But it's good seeing it. You're surprised, you didn't know it was coming. But I think probably of all time, you know, Monty Python or Spike Milligan or something that I saw in the early 70s when I was a kid, you know, and it just goes in. But yeah. I really like Big Train.
Cool. So what does the future hold, apart from your show that's just round the corner? I hear something about some German stand-up opera.
Yeah, well, I've got this stand-up show for the next 2 weeks. Then I'm going to Germany, where the composer Richard Thomas has already begun rehearsing a show called Stand Up, which is an opera for 9 singers about a London stand-up comedy club, and we're writing the words together, and they're being translated into German by a man called Hermann.
Nice. Not Baron von Kamhorn.
Not whoever texted us with a false German name. And it opens on January the 21st. It's in a little theatre in Hanover, and it'll run about 6 times a month for about 6 months.
And you're going to bring it over here?
I don't think so. I mean, in a way, we're so knackered from, you know, the West End panic. He said to me, you know, one of the great things about this, and I went, what? And he said, there's no way it can possibly transfer anywhere. But also, it's kind of like a rerun of Springer, but different.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
But stripped down. And then after that, I'm going on tour in February all around your country of England and Wales and Scotland, but not Ireland. And then after that...
Why not Ireland?
Because it's not economically viable.
Oh.
Not with a kind of... I mean, I'm doing 100-seater rooms, you know, and it's sort of pay a support act, pay for the travel lodge... you can't really make it work to get all the way over there. But I'm touring in February, and then I'm doing a DVD next year. Someone wants to film me, the fool, and try and market it commercially. But then that obliges me to do Edinburgh and tour again in the autumn to try and do what's called raising your profile.
Yeah.
That's what PR people call it. Although I'm quite happy. I just want to maintain my profile or even possibly lessen it a bit, which is why I've come to this cellar. Underground in
But you've got to love our little hot steamy Stella.
It's great.
Stella?
So but loads of stuff. And also I'm supposed to be writing something for the National Theatre that I haven't started yet to do in a little workshop, which will be a weird play about folk singers in the Napoleonic Wars.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it might be.
Do you say a workshop?
Yeah, what'll happen is I'll write it and then they'll let me sort of rehearse it for 2 weeks. And then no one will see it. It'll just be on in a room like this.
Yeah.
And a man will look at it from the National Theatre and he'll either go yes or no. And if he says yes, then I'll get a bit more time and money to develop it a bit more. But I've, you know, it's already gone a bit wrong because I emailed the folk singer Eliza Carthy, who you may have heard of, to ask for her advice about my plot that I had and whether it was viable. And she explained to me that the whole kind of premise of it was historically inaccurate in terms of the way that folk singers operated in the early 1800s. There was no way they would have done the things that I'm saying. And I was quite pleased because that meant, you know, I'm already off on the wrong direction and I like doing things that I can't do.
Yeah, well, it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good. So someone earlier, the comedian friend of mine, said that you are a prolific comedian, and it's true. You've summed that up within the last hour, haven't you?
Yeah, although I'm not so much prolific as I just don't work very often, so it appears that I'm doing more than I am when people see me. You know, I'm not around enough for people to get bored.
But on your website, there's an awful... If you want to give your website a little plug, what's the address of that?
www.stuartlee.co.uk. There is a lot of stuff on it, but that goes back to 1987.
But there's also an awful lot of listings. It's like, oh, I'm here now, I'm doing some DJing.
Yeah, but I didn't know anything for 3 years, though. I just worked on this theatre piece for 3 years, you know, and so... You know, I'm back out. They also had to do a load of gigs just to get good again because I didn't know what I was doing when I came back. Yeah. It was rubbish.
But you DJ at a club, don't you?
Yeah, well, sometimes. And yeah, sometimes I've done DJing at the Monarch and also at the Albany.
Yeah. So for the benefit of the freshers here who still have only been in London for a couple of months now, can you give them any good comedy club tips? Where to go and see some good talent?
Well, a really good one, which is the first Monday of every month, or the first Thursday or something, is Lipstick and Shopping at the Albany, Dances at the Albany, which is all ladies with one guest man. But it's really, really good.
Have you been that guest man?
I've been that guest man 3 times, and actually that's kind of what eased me back. It got me my confidence back. It's so interesting as well, there's so few female acts, the ones there are have to really distinguish themselves from one another, so you get a real variety. You don't just get people talking about stuff, you get a really mad mix of things. Oh, that's really good. I really like it there. And Danielle Ward's club at the Betsy Trotwood is really good, and also Josie Long and is running a gig called the Troy, and both of those clubs, they've identified a kind of crisis in comedy, which is that in 1979 we had alternative comedy, and what's happened in the last 25 years is that Jongleurs has become the brand name of alternative comedy, and that's where people go for stag nights and nights out, and it doesn't really, it's kind of like what alternative comedy was supposed to replace. So they're sort of talking about trying to have a new kind of wave of young comics, and I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm slightly jealous, though.
I'm going to break the flow, and I have a question about your the German stand-up thing. I'm just interested about the whole process of writing something to be translated into another language.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have problems where you write something and you give it to translator and he says, this joke, you, no way it makes sense.
No, well, we thought really early on that you can't do puns or wordplay, right? Because obviously the word will not have the same two meanings in German as it does in English. But the other thing that we twigged fairly early on is German's a really good language for ideas, right? You know, there's massive compound words. So if we wrote stuff that was kind of about ideas rather than language, we'd be all right. And what the guy's done, Herman, is he said to us early on, you know, your problem is there are very few single-syllable words in German, they're massive compound words. It's quite hard to keep the meter of things. But he's been really good at making things rhyme, you know. We had a line about feeding asbestos to a duck, and that's a syllable short when you translate it into German. So it comes out as something klein, a small duck, feeding asbestos to a small duck. That's fine. In fact, it's arguably funnier that the duck is small and it's having asbestos fed to it. But it's just having an intelligent translator, and he's really good. Ben Elton was on Front Row the other day saying how hard it had been to translate the jokes that he's written for his Queen musical into German for the German production. But it would be, because they're all rubbish and they're all based on culturally specific things about a peculiarly British frame of reference and kind of a false notion of street language that an old out-of-touch man would have. But ours isn't like that, because it's more about ideas. So they do translate really well. And actually, some things are much funnier in German, you know, because it dignifies it. And the whole thing about doing opera on anything is it sort of makes it seem important, and add the notion that it's in German to that. And the idea of translating a long routine about someone being sick on their shoes or something, or arguing about the death of Father Christmas into German, it suddenly feels like Goethe. So it's great. I couldn't be happier.
Right, we've got about 7 minutes left with Stuart Lee in the Rare FM studio. So quickly get last-minute comments and emails into studio@rarefm.co.uk. Now, you're not just a comedian, but you're also into your music, and you write for various newspapers and do lots of reviews and stuff like that, don't you?
Yeah, I was really lucky, because I mean, in about 96, I wrote some stuff for the Sunday Times about comedy, and then they started a music section, and the woman had seen how much music there was in my house and said, do you want to be the bottom of the pile? You know, you can do all the tiny things. And I've managed to hold on to that bottom of the pile. I've managed to resist and avoid promotion for nearly a decade now. And it's funny, it started off as a bit of fun, but actually between about 99 and about 12 months ago, it just was great, because I wasn't earning anything. Everything I'd done on telly got cancelled. I couldn't work out how to do stand-up anymore. But I'd still got my 2 record reviews a week, so I had my rent covered, you know. And it was a real lifesaver. I felt like I was under kind of patronage from the Sunday Times. It was bizarre. But yeah, so I love doing that, and it's great. I mean, you feel a terrible responsibility about the amount of CDs you get sent you just can't listen to.
Yeah.
But every now and again, I have a big pile through, and I find something that just never would have occurred to me. Like this woman from here, Jolie Holland, who's on from the Be Good Tanya's. Her solo album's really great.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, good tip.
I think she left after that album. But brilliant.
But you also heard from a band once who are, in fact, UCL students.
Well, people put things into my hands now.
Yeah.
You know,
Listen to this.
And it was, yeah, and that the best thing was in Edinburgh, someone gave me a CD, a band called the Abdominal Showmen. And you just think, well, that's a rubbish name for a man. It's going to be like Half Man, Half Biscuit. It's brilliant. It's like a kind of Glaswegian streets crossed with Portishead, and they haven't got a record deal yet, but they're fantastic, the Abdominal Showmen. And yeah, and these lads from Jail, they gave me this a Fall gig. I'm always at the Fall gigs, and so are they, and so I played it on Resonance FM.
Well, we're going to play it for everyone now.
Okay.
I can't remember what the track that we called.
Number three.
It's number three, and it's called Renaissance Man. So. Jail's very own Jail, as played on Resonance FM.
It's all right, isn't it?
By Stuart Lee. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, you know what? I couldn't really hear it in here.
Oh, really?
Because you have it all down.
We do.
Quiet.
Otherwise, you get all the feedback.
It sounded a bit, you know, it's all right, wasn't it?
Mm.
They should be encouraged.
They should. Yeah. We like to encourage
them. If they want me to say a quote, if you're listening, Jail, and you want me to say a thing, right, email me and I'll make something up and you can have it. But I can't do it now.
Put that on the front. Email me, I'll make something up.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Email me, I'll make something up. I mean, I'll say whatever you want me to say, I'll say it.
So we've just got a matter of minutes left before you run off and support some of your new, well, not your comedians. But
yes, I think of them all as my comedians.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm pimping them out around town to different venues.
Going to see their progress,
yeah.
See how much money they're bringing you.
You know.
Check them then.
Yeah, who are you going to see?
I'm going to go see Danielle Ward at the Pars Head. There's a load of people on.
Oh, well, there you
go. I might get halfway home and just lose the will to do that.
Maybe. But the next couple of weeks are going to be very busy.
Yeah, well, I start on Tuesday at Soho Theatre. I'm excited to see. Because, you know, historically, I've never found there's a definite relationship between getting good reviews in Edinburgh and anyone coming to see you in London.
Mm.
But it's only a 120-seater room. I've done 40 for Tuesday night and 70 for Friday, so I might be all right. We'll see what happens.
Oh, it'll be great. And how can we get hold of tickets?
Well, you can go to the Soho Theatre or ring them up or go on their website, which I expect is sohotheatre.com or something. You find it's easy. And there's concession. I had to fight hard to have concessions, and there are concessions.
Wow. Thank you very much. Nice. We'll all go, won't we? I think we'll have a Rare FM trip.
Do come.
Yeah.
It's quite good.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure you're being modest. I'm sure.
And actually,
seen the previews, haven't you, Ed?
Well, I saw the Bastion Arts Centre.
Yeah.
It's very good.
The finished thing. I've got a new plan for stand-up, which is I'm gonna do this, tour it in February, and then never do it again.
Oh.
And then do a new hour in August next year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, album, tour, whatever.
So if I come and see you, do you promise that you won't point at me as I go to the toilet?
I absolutely won't. None of that will not happen at all.
Great.
There'll be no one need feel afraid.
Okay, well, we'll definitely come along. Phoebe, Ed, any more questions for Stuart Lee?
Go on.
Do you ever hang out with Harry Hill?
Yes, I do. Harry Hill is one of my...
One of his series.
I script edited his Channel 4 show, yeah. But I know him from... I knew him when he was called... I knew him before he did comedy, actually, yeah. Well, I met him in Edinburgh when he was a medical student. He's exactly the same off screen as he is in... in real life.
What's the funniest thing he's ever done then? You're chuckling now.
The funniest thing he's ever done. And he's I don't know. What off? He likes to create strange situations, but a lot of them, you know, you see them coming out in his work anyway.
Yeah.
He'll often, you know, you often receive something unusual in the post from him.
He's a very good painter.
He is a fantastic painter.
I would love to get hold of some of his artwork.
Yeah.
I've seen a bit in Cheap Date magazine.
No, he's really good. He paints sort of kind of slightly surreal representational art, not unlike sort of Stuckey's stuff, actually, for anyone who's into their Brit art definitions. But yeah, he's really, really good. So yeah, he's. I haven't got many showbiz friends, but he's my showbiz friend, I expect.
Aww. Him, he should exhibit at the Stuckey's Gallery.
Yeah, it'd be good. I'd probably go for it. Yeah.
Because there was an image he'd done of one of those crystal gardens,
yeah,
you know, and with the Queen Mother,
yeah,
and a guy playing the bagpipes.
Well, I think what he tries to do is paint the images that are in his mind to the absolute best of his ability, but his ability is limited, and that gives them a desperate quality of someone, you know, someone trying their hardest at the extent of what they can possibly do. He's great. He's a better comedian than he is a painter, though.
He's good at both.
Yeah.
I've seen him live twice. And it,
have you?
Yeah. I've got T-shirt as well.
I've seen a limited number. I'm bad. I've seen a limited number of comedians. Bill Bailey and just a few of the others. And
I've seen you live once in Guildford, actually.
Oh, yeah. What, in the double act?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you...
That's right. A weird bloke came up on stage, didn't he? I remember that happening. A weird bloke interrupted and came up on stage in Guildford. I remember it very well.
I saw you in Edinburgh once.
Right. Which walking about.
No, once I did actually bump into you in your chest,
right,
because I was quite small, but I bumped into your chest and then I saw you perform as well.
Right.
So, I suppose not doing too
badly. I paid money to have the experience, you didn't.
What, to bump into his chest?
No, I didn't, no, for an experience.
What experience?
Going to see him live in Guildford.
But I did pay money. I don't understand.
Ed, have you got any more questions?
Yeah, I've
you've seen me live, haven't you, Ed?
Yeah, I've seen you over twice.
Over two times.
Once, what's that? I interviewed you at that weird benefit gig for that Spider-Man Father's Rights play.
Oh, yeah.
That was really...
Yeah, I was set up for that.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know it was for... Yeah, I was. I absolutely didn't... There's no way I would have supported that thug. Yeah.
He was as well. Yeah. Outside of his Spider-Man costume.
No, he was a thug. Yeah, the man that was Spider-Man from Fathers for Justice, right? This guy, PJ, he runs really crap South London clubs. And he said, would you do this gig for me? I went, oh, yeah, all right. Because he reminds me of my father. I don't like him, but he reminds me of my father, so I have to do what he tells me, PJ. And he said, I'll be a banana, you know. And then the next, a day before it starts, he goes, benefit for Fathers for Justice. And I rang him and went, I never agreed to do a benefit for Fathers for Justice. And he went, I'll be all right. I went, no, well, I don't agree with them. I don't like them. And he goes, well, Dave's coming down. Who's he? Dave, the one that dressed as Spider-Man, right? Well, he's going to start off the evening. I went, what's he going to say? And he went, don't worry, he won't say anything controversial. I went, what's he going to say? And he went, I've told him to not go on and start calling his wife a bitch, right? I thought, well, that's not a good start, is he? And the bloke was just a thug, right? And like all those blokes in Father for Justice are, obviously, egomaniac thugs who think that their suffering's all about them, you know? And, yeah, it was a weird night. And then at one point, Dave from Fathers of Justice took question and answers from the audience. And someone said to him, is it difficult now if you turn up dressed as Spider-Man? People, you know that it's you. And he went, yeah, it is. It is difficult. And then someone, there was only eight people there. One of them went, why don't you go dressed as another superhero to keep them guessing? And he went, yeah, I could do that, yeah. And that was the level of dialogue. It was ridiculous. And then when Tim Vine was on and somebody was taking a fight, it was terrible. That was one of the first gigs I came back to do, and it made me just think, I can't be bothered ever doing stand-up again. I hate it. So it was good. Terrible night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just bizarre. I'm getting quite drunk.
Yeah, no, well, I'm sorry if I didn't wasn't really paying attention to you, but I was in a really bad mood by the end of it.
And I think I might have heckled Tim Vine in an unfortunate manner. But, right.
I felt deeply humiliated by it.
Oh. I was also going to mention... Martin White, who is has a link to Rare FM and to you here, and he emailed you complaining that you'd stolen a joke, which you had. I think I've seen you mention it.
Oh, yeah.
Act.
Yeah, I do.
And he has previously appeared on this station as our guest accordionist. He comes in and plays covers of pop songs and on accordion.
Yeah.
And I thought he'd like to.
No, he emailed me saying that there's a bit I do about people being so bored they wear tea cosies as hats that is actually. Either by Spike Milligan or Billy Connolly from the early 70s. And I didn't know that, but obviously remembered it subconsciously. But then I chose to talk about that on stage, and it gave me an extra 10 or 12 minutes. So the joke's on Martin White's stupid accordion playing face.
You can send him a cheque for 3p every time you mention
him. He can put that on his CDs.
Yeah, he can. Look at his stupid accordion playing face.
Oh dear. Anyway, it has been. It's 6 minutes past nine. I feel so much guilt for keeping you for 6 minutes too long.
The meter's running.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it doesn't cost much. You've seen where I work.
But round it off. Thank you so much for coming
down.
Thanks
a lot for having us.
It feels just like a huge pleasure, privilege, and honour, and all
these
kind of things.
It was really great.
Good
luck.
There's going to be a huge hole when you've gone as well.
Yeah, we'll still sit around here all huddled around these mics.
like meerkats.
Good luck, Rare FM. Good luck.
we need it. Yes. What should we? Well, we're going to put on the Sadies, and we're going to go into my little country corner. Because we need three country songs in a row just to keep us going through the night. And so we will see you when you're doing your stand-up. We will see you, and you will see an audience.
Please come. And, please come, anyone.
Yes, we will. We will.
Yeah, definitely.
We will. Thank you again,
Cheers.
Mr. Stuart Lee.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Here are the Sadies.
Bye, students.